This is then the session on understanding the future by looking a lot at what you've already been doing in your life. And what God has been doing in your life is probably the most important thing to do. And so what we'll do is work a little bit in the whole area of timelines, making a life timeline. And as I said before, that has it reveals a great deal. For instance, many things can happen as you move on in life, and you don't figure it out. But the fact is, God is at work, because He's put you into this world. Psalm 139 is a tremendous insight into that, and He made you with a purpose. We have a purposeful God. So He's put you here not just to be here, not just one more person. What I love, as a matter of fact, I'll just take that moment just for look at Psalm 139. It's just a portion there, but it was a special, a couple years ago, I was just looking at this and realized that God had us in mind, created us in His mind before He put us in a body. And it really means that you were with great thought put on this earth and made. And so Psalm 139, starting with verse 13, it says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth." Then it talks about, "And your eyes saw my unformed body." So you were conceived in His mind before He put you into a body. He didn't just say, "Well, we've got some a person here, and let's see, we need a few more female bodies over there, so let's put them in female bodies. Here's a masculine body." He didn't do that. He created you in your full masculinity, your full femininity. He did not make any mistakes, or it shows, of course, He had a real purpose. So as He conceived you, He conceived you as being part of what His creation, but what is He is doing, what His purposes are. God doesn't do anything without a purpose. He's not a purposeless person. He would not, perfectly purposeful He would be. So then He says, "When I wove, my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, and when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, you saw, and my eyes saw your unformed bodies. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God, how vast is the sum of them. If I were to try to count them, they'd be more than the sand and the sea." Well, all of these is just to say that He created you, because He's a purposeful God, He created you for a purpose. And that's very, very important to understand. So God does that, and He takes you, just to say, you'll see several of those things on the development page I have there. He's a purposeful God. We know it from Psalm 139, but also He has purposely drawn you to Himself. And that's Ephesians 2:10. We were created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which He had prepared in advance for us to do. So there's very much of a sense of that God has prepared you. He is purposeful. He's prepared you. You can fit into His plans, His purposes. That's what He wants. But then sin came along and it cut us off for a bit, and until we have been reunited with Him to fulfill all that purpose. But even before that, you'll see as you make timelines, God was at work in your life, because He is the sovereign God. He was putting you in situations. He put you into a family. You didn't vote. He sent you to a kindergarten where you were exposed to other people, and not only children, but teachers, and you didn't get a vote. You lived in a town, a city. You didn't get a vote. These were all things that were moving already without any of your knowledge, your permission. It just happened. And yet all of those were contributing to how you began life. I was 5 out of 6 kids, and there are a lot of things I learned about that. And I had 4 older brothers. I was the 5th, and there was just so much to be learned from them, but also there were a lot of things I had to learn how to survive with them, because you know they were always making life miserable for me. I told them I'm surprised I've even come out somewhat normal with my 4 older brothers and all they used to do, but they, you know, I would watch. So by the time they all got out and I was still there, they'd come back and just really instruct my parents that you're too loose with him. You know, you've got to be, you know, stronger with him. But they didn't need to be, because I said I watched you guys make all the mistakes and I avoided them. It's just easy to put that together. So, but
did your survival help you?
Yeah. Well, but oh yeah, right. Well, anyhow, you see that. Well, it was interesting because all my life I have had to lead older people. So when I came, as a young lieutenant, I had to lead all these seasoned, understanding sergeants. You know, well, you know, there's difference. And then when I got with the navigators, and I was 31 years old and asked to lead Europe and parts of Europe, and so they were older than I was, but I knew how to handle older people, how to respect them, how to ask for their opinion, not tell them what to do, but draw from them. There's other sides that they can help me with, even though I'm asked to lead. They can give me wisdom I don't have. And I just knew that from growing up. And it was reinforced, of course. They just always told me how little I knew. So anyhow, you just see where you don't have a choice, but all those things are going to shape you. And that's what's very important. And so as you move along in life, I often look at it as a tunnel. You have a tunnel, and if this is the midpoint, and you start moving along over the years, and when you get to about the 40s, some things happen. As anyone has studied and everything I've read and researched, you find it somewhere in the 40s is the time where you begin to understand why I'm here. And I was sharing this with a group of latter 20s, maybe 30-ish, and they were saying, well, can I read a book and, you know, find out faster? You know, isn't there a test that can tell me? And I said, no, because it's a matter of just maturing. It's watching God use you and understanding how he tends to use you. We all could have leadership gifts, but because of our personalities and some of our other gifts, we all have usually a primary gift and two or three other gifts, secondary gifts. Those gifts will put spin on it. It's a very different way. Well, you'll see that. You'll see that as one grows. So you get in your 20s, and then your 30s, and then now you're in their 40s. And so people will say, you begin to realize a couple of things are very important. You'll say, my goodness, I haven't done all the things that I thought I would do when I was in my 20s. I haven't become all that I thought. I thought I'd be this by that time, or I thought I had done this. Or the decisions I've made in my 20s and 30s begin to bear fruit, both for good and for bad in my 40s. And then you suddenly realize that you are halfway through life. If, you know, you go on to, let's say, 80, you're halfway through, and am I in the right place? So it's a time of questioning, and it's good. Where do I go? What do I do? Am I in the right business? Am I married to the right woman or the right man? That's what people even ask. That's why you see a lot of divorces come about in that time, because there's real questioning. So this is just general, not necessarily Christians. It just that's what happens. Everybody, when they get in their 40s, begin to think, how do I maximize the second half? Because of all the hundreds of lifelines that I've read and studied and gotten to know, even those that have passed away and books and biographies are written about, I've gone in and looked at those. And then Bobby Clinton, who's a professor at the Fuller Seminary in the leadership department, he has that and he's developed that. That's where I learned it. And I've read lots of those, the students, that they had to make their own timeline and one of a significant person in history. So you see, the second half is very clearly a far greater half than your first half. And so people, our world isn't that. I have a brother-in-law who is 44 and working for American Airlines, and they just, one leader came in and had this great idea to get rid of all the older guys. So he was given a package. He was 17 years with them and given a very good package to leave. But then he left, and he was invited to be the vice president of purchasing for them. And they promoted a guy who was with a much younger guy. He was 32 years old. And so he was immediately rehired, but now as a consultant at twice the price, to help this guy who took the place that he should have taken. And so he spent not just a few weeks, he spent 2 years coaching and helping this man. And he was totally ill-equipped to do this. And so you have this world is saying, the second half, it's all downhill. It's all, we need younger minds and younger ways, but that's not true. You've gathered so much through this history that the second half is going to be a far greater contribution to the things of God, to this world, than they ever were. I mean, I remember when I went over 50, I was speaking somewhere and I made a statement. And this fellow said, excuse me, would you repeat that again? So I did, and he wrote it down. And he says, now who said that? And I said, I did. And he says, oh, okay. Well, see, when I was younger, I always had to make sure I quoted somebody that had been around long enough. But now, suddenly, I'm recognized of being around long enough. You know, so just being around sometimes gives you credibility. So anyhow, so when people, for instance, I'm talking to a lot of them about in this area, they'll say, well, you know, how do I know where God wants me to go and what to do? And I said, well, the first thing we need to do is look out where you've been. It's like if you're in a tunnel, where does most of the light come from as you move along here? Well, it comes from behind you. And it's not until you get to this midpoint that then, and it's pretty scary because there's not much light coming from here in one sense, not huge light, but you can look at what's gone, and that gives far greater light. But then way out here, it still may not be real clear to us. But we begin to take steps of faith moving towards it based a lot on what God has done in and through you to that point. And you can see that. You can trace it through. And I'd like to just do that a little bit with Joseph, and then we're going to start your own timeline. You won't be able to complete it here. But just to give you an idea here, I've put in that the process. Let me get my other. Just a couple of conclusions that are very important for us here that I've just seen so often. Because the desire of our heart, you know, is to really finish strong, make the efforts of our lifetime count. And Moses writes that in Psalm 90, verses 12, and then another. He just, you know, he says, oh God, that the efforts of a lifetime will really count. Make them count. And so we all want to do that, and it's very important. But it's good to know that, A, he's purposeful. B, he's the sovereign developer. That's really interesting. In Job 10:8, Job says, you alone have shaped me. You have shaped me. He's shaping us all the time. And so that shaping takes place, as it's mentioned here, over a lifetime through people, events, and circumstances. If you look at those and you begin to understand what came through that, what contribution came through that, what happened, what decisions did I make, those are very important for us. And then finally, lastly, our response and proactive cooperation are crucial. So we have a sovereign God who basically is moving and preparing his servants for his purposes. And that's, you know, it's exciting to see. Secondly, he will test us along the way. And I'll show you that with Joseph. He will test us. And what is he testing when he tests us? Remember when Samuel was going to anoint David, and he passed by all his older brothers, and finally he said, well, who's left? But then he says in 1 Samuel 16:7, he said, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart, and he will always be testing your heart. Can I trust you with more? Has your faithfulness demonstrated? In your heart, is there one that if I give you authority, if I give you position or opportunity or give you some of these things, can I trust you to handle it as I would handle it? Will you do my will? You know, even 2 Chronicles 16:9 says, you know, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole world looking for a faithful person, he's saying. Looking for that person so that he can cause his power to work in their behalf. If he's going to give us power through many different ways, if he's going to give us that, he really doesn't, he wants to know, will you use it right? I mean, even those three temptations in Matthew 4 were all temptations with, what will you do with my power? First one, will you use it for yourself? Turn the rocks to bread? He said, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, will you use it to be spectacular? You know, go up to the heights and jump down? Do something really impressive to make people... Will you use the power for that? For your own making, you know, your own furtherment? And then finally, it's will you use your power to dominate people, to be over people? And that's where he comes back and he says, no, I'll... It's the Lord that says, serve you and serve you only. And so these are always tests of power. So he looks into us and sees that. So let me just then, you have there, I'll just, I'm assuming you all know the life of Joseph and probably read it many times, but this will just be helpful. There are times in his life, the first 17 years, were very important. I call it the foundation years, and we all have those. And what we're looking for throughout this is the idea of we're looking for people, events, and circumstances. And in each of these across, we can see how those people affected him. And so, for instance, who were the people, the important people of Joseph's foundational years? Yep, his father. Now, what was just one thing that you think about how the father influenced him? Just one thing about the father. Yeah. Yeah. And why? Why was he the favorite son? Yeah, first son of the wife he really loved, yeah. So there were 12 kids. He was the 11th of 12. Did he have any inheritance coming his way? No. 11 of 12, so there's no inheritance. No inheritance. What were some of the... his mother was helpful. She died when giving birth to Benjamin, his younger brother. But his mother died. And of course, we would have to say his brothers, his wonderful, affirming brothers. Would you say this was a dysfunctional family? Yes, it probably was. And so it was struggling. So the brothers had a unique, and they had reason in somewhat, some sense that, you know, because what happened in some of the events that it encouraged the brother? One is he got the coat. What else? Dreams. And he had two dreams, and both of them were very profound. But he didn't understand them. The only thing it affected his brothers. You know, like, hey, I had a great dream, guys. You know, you all bowed down to me. Well, see, he had no idea what that dream was. But and we don't have time to interact on this, but sometimes after people do one, and it takes to do this a good 5-6 hours of really thinking through. And that's, I mean, if I'm asking one of the staff or some leaders or people that I'm working with to do this, it takes time. But, you know, you look at this and you think, wow, you know, what kind of things went on there? Did any of you ever have a sense that later on is your destiny? And sometimes you only see it looking back. A sense of what God wants to do with your life? You know, so you look in the scriptures and you see, like Samson, every time he went by the gladiators, the men fighting, he says his heart stirred. Wow, I'd like to be one. You know, And we all have that. Fireman, be a baseball player, or something like that. But when God starts entering into this, for me, my parents had planned to have four children. And they had all boys, and they were hoping to get a girl. And I came, the fifth. And I was one of the ones, probably of all my family, just, I have no idea why, but I just love God. I just wanted to follow Him. I was just desirous of Him. And my grandfather, who came from Sweden, and my mother, he was a godly man, he came to know Christ here in the U.S., my mother kept saying, "You're just like your grandfather." And she would say that, and she'd tell me stories. Well, then one day, we decided we would leave the military. I had gone to West Point, and I wasn't necessarily thinking of a career, but I had spent 7 years in, had to be extended because of Vietnam. But I knew my father, who owned several businesses, a very wealthy and very successful man, and all my older brothers worked for him. And they went out, worked other places, and came in. And I knew that my dad and I had a very close relationship because I was the fifth. And there are some, he got a little bit older, he's in his 50s, and he'd always come to my football practices, he'd watch. I had far more time with him. And so I think a lot of us felt like the favorite son, and that's probably good. We want all our kids to feel like they're the favorite ones. But I always knew there was something special. So when I concluded that God did not want me to come into business and not stay in the military, but come with the Navigators, they were both Christians, very committed Christians, but I was really fearful of almost telling my dad. And so my wife and I sat down in the kitchen and we told my dad, or my mom and dad, we were just telling him about how the Lord's leading us. And so my dad turns to my mom and he says, "Sweetheart, why don't you tell him?" And so they said they were not planning to have it, this one. And so when this number five comes, he said, "I got praying. And my mother said, there's something unusual about this boy. Not in terms of better than anybody else, but why did God give us?" He says, and then my mom would always pray that one of us would really be full-time serving the Lord in the spirit of her grandfather, or her father. And so he said, "You're just a fulfillment." And I thought I made this decision. You know, I didn't at all. I was fitting in to what God was moving in other people and ways. But see, even in these areas, he didn't understand that dream. But boy, he did later. He understood. But there are inklings that you will get. And especially as you become a young adult, as you start really following Christ, you'll see things happen. And it's amazing how many people do sense that. That what God wants you to do isn't necessarily going into full-time ministry or anything. I didn't even have that in mind. But so you'll see this, and you could trace this all along the way. 17 to about 27 is first job, slave. And, of course, a huge event took place, and that is what his brothers did. And this was a turning point event, because at 17, and we could put that down in the events, his brothers, he was sold into slavery. So here he comes, and now who's the person who's going to be very important in his life here? Potiphar, yeah, Potiphar is. So Potiphar, and he didn't realize he was training the next ruler, but what did he learn from Potiphar? Delegation, yeah, commercial things. I mean, we're led to believe, as I've studied it, he was one of the senior officials. He had quite a piece of property, and he had other slaves. He had lots of animals. And eventually, it said, he took over his whole household. So this man learned management. He learned leadership, yeah, all those kinds of things. And, of course, God does that. He will put you in places for you to learn. And from somebody, it's just amazing. And even before you become a believer, you can see this happening. And this is what's beautiful, because God created you. It wasn't just some other coming. Well, another person who was very, I'll call her Pot's wife, she played a major role for him. You could see, like, circumstances. He had favor, and he was as a slave. Events, he was put in charge. of all things. And just a lot of things took place. And we just could see that. It's just, it kind of begins to unfold. Well, then another major event took place, and that is, we could write that in here, but that turned place, and what took place at Mount 27, 28, what was that? Yes, and why? What was the event that put him in there? Yeah, Pot's wife. She appears. Well, apparently she's been always after him, and from what I understand, just reading this the other day in the message, and it said that Potiphar really, really liked Joseph. I mean, there was a great relationship. Probably what happened is this Potiphar's wife was very attractive, very young, and he was a lot older, could have even been 20 years older. And so she's attracted to this other younger guy. You can just see some of those things happening. But what was really interesting here is this event took place, is he made the right decision, and he made it for the right reasons. Remember, there are two reasons. And what were they? Remember? I will not sin against God, and I will not break my trust with Potiphar. Now, he could have been killed. I mean, probably the normal thing would have been to kill, have killed him. But Potiphar, I think he knew his wife, and he knew Joseph, and he spared him, and they put him in prison. So the next job was prisoner. So we see he's really going up the ladder here, and this is about a 2 or 3 year period. Now, I would just say this, that it's very interesting. First of all, we know that he again received favor from the warden. He also interpreted two dreams. We could put those of events. He interpreted. And often when you go into a period of isolation, I call this an isolation period. And a period of isolation can be a few days, some weeks, months, or it could be years. It could be caused by God moving in to do it. For instance, a loss of a job, and suddenly you're without a job. Or you something has happened in a tragic way. Or you have sickness. Or you can even initiate it and step out for a while. And the purpose of isolation is this. It's God getting your full attention because he wants to tell you something. He wants to speak into your life. But your life is too busy. It's too active. It's too engaged with other things. If he spoke then, he couldn't get your attention. And this is why you can do, in a proactive way, get off alone with God. Now, Phyllis and I, after Christmas, we just took 3 days of prayer and fasting. And a lot of it was just to update, get into the scriptures, be alone, pray a lot, walk a lot, and try to listen. Get my heart to the place that I'll listen as I'm reading through the scriptures. And just, Lord, speak to me. And boy, there are a couple of good corrections or a couple of decisions I'm thinking about. I talked them through with the Lord. And it was a period of just moving yourself away. And I've watched this happen with people. They can't figure out, and they're praying like crazy to get a job. And I'll pray with them that we'll get one. But I said, "What? Why do you think you're here?" "Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's a transition he wants." No, it could very well be that God has brought this into your life because he wants to hear, he wants you to hear his voice. And that happens. And oh man, going through some of the greats and that biographies are out there as I've read them, often they'll have one or two major isolation times to just get your, and I think here it was, because out of this came, here was the time I think God spoke to him to tell him about those dreams. This was, I don't know for, you know, it doesn't say that, but it seems very clearly, because then there's another incident that brings him out, and then he steps into what God, begin to move towards what God wants him to do. But what was the incident that brought him out? Again, dreams. But I feel, again, well, we'll get back to this as a test. There was a test here. Was he ready? You see, if I were calling the shots, I would have said that because he made the right decision for the right reasons here, I would have said, okay, you ready to be this, you know, take on. But God said, no, No, there's still some more. The hardest thing to do is wait. The hardest thing also is to hear God. And so I would have said, he's got the character, he's got the abilities, he's got what he needs to have. You know, let's, you know, usher him in. But he doesn't. He puts him away, not just for a couple months, but for 2, possibly 3 years of just sitting and waiting, even though he got favor. And along that time, often God will do something to help you to see that he's still with you. And that's where he interpreted those dreams. And they came true in both cases. But what was really another test is, remember in Genesis 41, he stands before, he's brought up, and Potiphar says, or not Potiphar, Pharaoh says, I understand you can interpret dreams. And what was his response, remember? Huh? Yeah, I can't, but God can. Do you realize what an important moment that was? It was seemed insignificant, but to God it was another test. Where's his heart? He could have said, yeah, I can do that. Yes. And he could have had short term. He says, you know, maybe if I do interpret this, how about letting me have some property and a farm myself? You know, there could have been a lot. I bet he struggled with that. He had to think that through. But he very clearly said, no, I can't. It's not me. But what is that God, I know a God who can. And he will do that. And so he does. And so he gets out. And so that was another test. God will put seemingly very, not so important decision to be made here. But boy, that was a big one because it was a test. And so he passes that test, and of course then he becomes a ruler. And so you see God's preparation of his life, and that was at 30 years old. And he goes on. Now, there was still one more major point that had to take place in his life, because, you see, his destiny was here. His destiny is always greater than your career, than your job. Your job or what you are doing will never be able to capture all that God has for you. It'll be bigger than that. Not necessarily a bigger job, bigger, but the things he wants to do with you through that are much greater. So his destiny was not to be the ruler or the second only to Pharaoh. No, that wasn't. That was just the way God chose. He could have chosen a number of ways to put him in place. But what was his greatest destiny?
Reconciliation.
Yeah, yeah. Remember Genesis 50, verse 20? When the brothers began to be nervous because the father died, they thought, oh, okay, now our father has kind of held back the wrath that should come on us from Joseph. And they said, boy, you know, we're going to be in trouble. And he says, no, don't worry, don't worry. He said, you know, you meant this, what you did for me, for harm, but God meant it for good. That what? That I might basically might save the remnant, save my people. I might be an instrument to God. And so his ultimate aim was here, not just here. But in order to do that, there was one more thing God had to do in his life. And it came right about here. And what was that? Yeah, reunited with his brother. I mean, if he's there to save them, the remnant, he better... reunite with him. And remember, he kind of drug that out a little bit because he wanted to get the father to be there. But one of the things that was very important here is that God wanted him not only to forgive, but to give much grace. You see, if he couldn't give grace to them, so he not only forgave them, but he brought them in and they were, you know, they had everything. They had the best places. They had all the rest. But he gave to them. And this was the ultimate test. And often is. Not that we can just forgive someone, but that we can just give them grace. Give them what they don't deserve. And so he could do that. And, of course, we know he fulfilled his purposes. Well, there's a lot we can learn here. A couple of them is this. One is God is always working to shape you into this Christ-likeness. Shape your character into the very person of Jesus. He will bring you circumstances. I was just thinking of this as when we watched that video this morning. You know, you just look at this guy and look at what he's gone through to become, you know, well, did, you know, was it wasted? I mean, here he is already in his 40s, and I've met this guy. And he just, I was down there in Mexico just when they're hiring, and he was far more qualified with all the things he's done for what they asked him to do. But he went away and thought, and he came back and he said, no, the two people that know you, who I respect, they say, take the job with Jim. It'll be far better for you. And they saw his needs in his life. And so he did. But you just think at that life, you know, what he's been through. But God is using this to create and prepare him for what he is going to do. We still have no idea. He's got a good job. He's going to probably lead that company now. But the fact is, what is going to come out through his life into the life to contribute to the purposes of God in that part of the world, we've yet to see that. And so God's just going to keep working. And he's not going to waste any of that. Another thing that he does, he works on the competences that you will need. The competencies that you will need. He's preparing you always for it. I mean, several of you have been around for a long time. You know, with Bob, you know, I know enough about you that it wasn't all your studies that made you able to create the things you did in business and create the planes, but it was the people and the circumstances that contribute constantly, wasn't it? I mean, it's just, if you went by your studies, that 4-year or 8-year period that you studied, you wouldn't have had that. It's just so much else that one needs for life. We need not only the hardware, but we need the software of our life. We're all made up of hardware and software. And as the more you get on in life, the more the software is important. How we handle people, how we work with people, relational issues, lots of things like that. So these are the things that that come about. So the very important thing about it, just the one verse on the heart, the testing, where he'll constantly do that, is found in 1 Thessalonians 2. Just wanted to share that with you because it's very important that he's still doing that. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 4, it says this, "On the contrary, we speak as men approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please men, but God, who tests our hearts." Tests our hearts. Can I trust you? Are you ready for what I have for you? And of course, all of you know, and you've watched it happen, where a person who has high capacities, what your resume reveals, has tremendous resume, but they don't have the character to hold up the position that these competencies are now placing them in. And I've watched that many times, and people, we hope sometimes that this person will, you know, get better as they're there. But we've seen these things, and what happens is a person gets out ahead of their moral and character base, and they collapse, and that's what you see. And so to move people fast, you know, I read a little bit about Gates. You know, Gates has suddenly, at the very, very early 30s, he had all these people that he was, you know, with Microsoft booming, and he, you know, there were just constant mistakes he was making with other people and issues and stuff like that. And fortunately, he had a pretty good center about himself. And I was just reading the other day, he spoke at a high school, and there are 10 things he told them, and they're really good. They're really good. I don't want to get into that. But anyhow, they're funny, but they're very good. But he had something, and you can see over the years he's grown. He's just become, the position was here, and he had to kind of catch up in his inner life, his ability with people, his moral life, his character life, you know, all these things. So anyhow, that gives you just an idea of it and how we can learn from a timeline. So what I'd like to do here is I'd like you to get started. You'll notice in the rest of the pages that it's all the timeline. What I'm going to do here for you is some of the things I've already printed in there, just an introduction, but I'd like you to go to the second page where it says Life Learning Line, Step 1. And so if you want to follow through with this, which I would really encourage you all to do, is you work with this, and of course, sorry, some of you, I have it up to the 50s, but you could just take another piece of paper and put 60s, 70s, or 80, whatever you've got. But you'll see a lot of things of the working with God. I was with one leader not long ago. He's an African, and he's had quite a life, and he's gone through university and all the rest, but he was the poorest of the poor. He was the son of the second wife of a man who had several wives. And so he didn't get anything. But his mother believed in him. She just believed. She worked hard. And she... this is before they became believers or anything. And she just worked hard. They lived out in the rural area. And finally, at 7 years old, she was able to talk one cousin to let him stay in that house, their house, because in their village they didn't have a school, but there was a school there. It was a larger village. And someone provided the $50 that he could go to kindergarten. Well, he was bigger than everybody, because he was seven, the others were five. And he arrived, he couldn't speak any English, and you know, a lot of it was in English. Then there was this man who wasn't a believer at all, who was a teacher, and he taught sixth grade. And he saw this young boy, and he went to him, and he had no uniform. They all had these uniforms. And he went and found a secondhand uniform and brought it to him, and because he was bigger, it came up here and everything. And I've talked to Corey many times about this. He would go, and he was very proud of it, but he couldn't wash it or clean it. And for the whole first 2 years, the only thing he could do is take very carefully a rag and wipe it off, you know, and care for it. But this man began to tutor him in English, and began to just show interest, and move him along, because the cousin that he was living with was just an immoral, terrible family, arguing all the time, and he had to live there. Then he moved on, and the story continues beautifully. He did, and by the time he got to the fifth or sixth grade, he took tests, he exceeded everybody, and then went on to another. And so now Corey has his master's degree. He's very bright. He speaks excellent English. Many times you can't understand some of the African English because it's a clipped English, but he speaks so well. And God, he's on our staff full time, God has used him in wonderful ways. But he made this timeline, and we sat and talked about this, and we both had tears as he was telling. And I said, "Corey, did you see God in this?" He said, "Oh golly, look at that. Well, he placed that in my heart of my mother that I should get this education." And it was at the university where he met Christ through the Navigators. And you know, so I mean, just a whole series of things. Well, you'll see this in your own life, but the way you started off then is as you, as it says here, you want to, and what I'd like you to do is let's all work on your 20s, okay? You guys can work on pre-20s, all right? Let's just work on our 20s to get it started here. We'll just take about 15 minutes, but it says, events, people, and circumstances, and it's giving those. And so what you do is, and not just write everything down, but write down, just think of it, and it says about six of them. You know, just think of the people in your life there, and then what you're going to do, once you have some people, and then once you have a few events, and what was the circumstances in your 20s, they might have changed, then you go back and evaluate them. What contribution did that make? What about those circumstances? What did it, and then we'll look at that, okay? So just go ahead and work right there where you are. Work with the 20s. Just follow the idea of events, people, and circumstances. You notice there's suggestions over there in that whole little list there. And that will help you. Just read that through. It gives you some ideas. So you've got a lot of them so far. Well, let's just kind of talk about it just to see how we're doing to get on it so that sets you up for ongoing to finish this if you like. These are terrific things to do with other a group of people as well. And then you complete it somewhere else, I mean at home, and then you come back with some of the thoughts and you share those. And more thoughts will come about as you hear other people say, "Oh, yeah, I forgot that, you know, or, yeah, I had whatever." So let's just take, John, let's take one of your events in your 20s.
When I was a person.
Okay. All right.
Well,
he could have created, was he involved in the event? Yeah, yeah, sure.
Jim Moss was my childhood pastor. We were raised on a dairy farm, and he'd always come and he showed us all of our brothers how to throw a curveball. So he taught us and built a relationship with us, and I think...
What was the effect of that for you?
Here's somebody who was a man of the cloth, a clergy that was could roll his sleeves up and have a good time with us just like he's one of us.
Okay.
So he built a relationship.
All right. Good.
And we've kept up with him all through life, and now he's much older, of course. Tragically, he has Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's. He made a big impact on him.
So he entered into your life. So that'd be a person more than an event, actually. So what would be an event? Jordan, how about you? In your pre-20s?
Pledging my fraternity.
A pledge into fraternity, okay. And why does that stand out? What?
To signal a shift in just the atmosphere that I was in. Some people that I was around, some new things that I was learning and being exposed to.
Okay, so it was an event that created a whole new environment for you. And that'd be good to really think that through. Ted, how about you? You have an event?
Challenged by my wife.
Early in the 20s?
Job or me.
Ah.
And that led eventually to a spiritual conversion, but a reality that I was putting lots into my job. Doing well and all that thing, forgetting about
the family.
Exactly.
And it was a turning point for you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It was either out or
in. Oh, never heard it that way before. You just say, yeah. Okay.
Pretty significant in my life.
Mary Lee, how about you?
Well, I accepted Jesus Christ into my life when I was in my 20s.
What age?
20.
Just exactly 20. Okay. And
I've been raised. My dad was a Methodist pastor, but I had never really had a relationship with Jesus Christ. And they didn't really understand that.
That event was, yeah. How about a person, Bill, what any in your 20s?
I think probably one of the people that shaped my life early on was when I graduated from college and I moved out here. And I went to work for Young Life with a program by the name of George Shepherd that started their inner city ministry and other ministries. And he was just an amazing prophetic guy. And used to watch his life and see God work in him.
And so what carried over to you from him was... At 20, what do you think? The way he lived his life?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the challenge, because I would not consider myself to be at all like him.
Yeah.
But yet, just the strength of belief and following through on what you believe and how you choose to, what you value.
Yeah. How about a person for you, John? Yes.
It would be married. I was married in 25.
Okay.
And that changed my life
completely. Okay. And so in this case, well, for instance, you wouldn't just say your wife because she's your wife and you took it on. But it would be important to understand when that happened, when that person came into my life, what did they bring? And, you know, as you would think that through. So what did at 25, what... Within that next couple of years, what did you realize you got into here?
I saw early on she brought much to the table that I needed that I didn't have.
Yeah.
In so many dimensions of my life. And I'd see God was taking this in terms of preparing us now as one unit to complete me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
To make up the deficiencies that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was longing, deeply longing at that time, years of studying and working hard, and boy, just the joy of having
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years after that, our first child.
So it started.
Yeah, I can see how this can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you're doing now, and that is you don't just put it down, but you really drill down with questions related to those things. And I can see that this is a great area. I'm going away from the house for 3 days. This can be a great thing for us to do as a couple.
Huh. Some of that, yeah. How many of you made a decision in your 20s that now you look back, at that time it was maybe this very dramatic change or whatever, like yours was a little bit dramatic, but later on you realized what an important decision it was? Anybody have any of those in your 20s?
I graduated from college as an engineer, and after 2 years, grew up on a farm and always thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. So after 2 years, I said, this engineering stuff is just pumping stuff through pipes. I'm not sure that's really what I want to do. So I want to try something else. And so I thought I'd try to go to the vet school. So we went to vet school, applied, and they accepted me. But then I found out that my wife was pregnant with a second child, and we decided that was probably not the right thing to do. And as I look back, it would not have been the right thing. We missed so much by staying put, and how our life progressed after that. It would have been the wrong thing.
Okay. You just saw that it switched back. Anything with you, Griff?
In the 20s, it was a Vietnam War, and that had a big effect in that. So
now, you were a pilot?
I was a farmer. I graduated as a pharmacist from the University of Texas, and I knew I was going to get drafted and decide I would volunteer for something to do more of what I wanted to do. We weren't taking direct commissions as pharmacists. We were taking doctors and dentists and nurses. We weren't taking pharmacists, so I went to the plan and said, well, what are you taking as a college graduate? They were taking pilots and navigators to give it a test. I went in and flew with the Air Force. But it really had a big effect because I really wasn't in the rank of pharmacy. That would not have been a good experience. It got me away from that education and into something else.
And you're still flying. Have your own plane.
But it took me to where I could see in the Air Force it really did a lot of things. Discipline that I didn't have, it gave me, leadership skills I didn't have. But it also allowed me to see a lot of other people doing a lot of different things for a living, and I didn't have to go back and So I left the military and went back to pharmacy to realize I wasn't happy to leave that. That's really hard when you spend 5.5 years getting...
You're qualifying. Yes, yes.
Parents have, sacrificed.
So you could relate as with Joseph as he came into this, and here he said, what is this? One of the things that I often say to 20-somethings is that whatever you do, be like Joseph. Whatever there... Give yourself to be faithful to the smallest job and make it fruitful. Bring it to a point of fruitfulness. In the 20s, that's what it's all about. You're all over the place. You don't need to figure out where you're going in your 20s. You don't need to figure out there's a call. A lot of parents today, a lot of your parents' age, they say, get a profession, get with a company and stay with it and go after, but it just doesn't work. Here it is, all that time in pharmacy, did you ever fulfill a prescription?
4 months between graduation and going to the Air Force, and I worked 4 months when I got out. It's really interesting, but we do have a big effect on our kids, and we have to watch, I think, what we say. But my mother and dad thought pharmacy was good, and they all thought it was professional. They've been around the military all the time. So to be an officer and a gentleman back to Congress and fly airplanes, they thought that was the pinnacle. When I left that and went back in the pharmacy, my mother thought I'd lost my mind, but then I went from pharmacy to real estate.
Yep. But one of the things that this timeline does is helps you see, you know, for instance, how you discern the will of God. And this one fellow came to me, he's a navigator staff, he's about late 40s, and the navigators, he was coming back from overseas, and so they were offering him all these different possibilities. So he was having trouble, and they're waiting, and they're saying, which one do you want? And he was gone to each of these places and looked. And finally, I said to him, so he was totally free to make any of those decisions. So I had him do a timeline, and we were just talking, and I said, now, John, if, let's trace back the decisions you've made. And so we pointed out a couple of decisions, and I said, but now, did you initiate those decisions? Were they your own? I mean, that you, or did someone come to you and invite you to consider this? He says, yeah, well, yeah, that's the way it always was. And we went back and traced six decisions he made, and every one of them, the offer of exact position came to him. Would you come and do this? He prayed about it and said, love to. So now they're asking you for you to come up with it yourself. I said, would you feel relieved if somebody said, you know, I think this one is a very good one for you. Would you pray about come and doing that? He said, oh, that would be just give me such relief. So we called the HR group and said, offer them something. You know, don't just give them five opportunities. But some of us, we've always initiated. You probably, Griff, just knowing you, you've thought of these things and you just went for them. And you begin to see how God causes you to make decisions. You know, yeah, go ahead, John.
But, you know, something that I've observed in my life, sometimes my parents and I were so close. We just loved each other. But sometimes the best advice was not what your parents would offer.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Your parents didn't want you to.
My mother and dad loved me to death.
And he's better.
They just couldn't think out of the box.
Right. And they would say, oh, this job is secure.
Yeah, right. They have a different set of criteria. Yeah.
And they said, he has lost his mind. What is the kid thinking? But I think sometimes the worst advice you can take maybe is from your parents because of the perspective, a different perspective.
Yeah.
It was just.
Talk so much, but my dad, that's all I heard all my life was security, security.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Benefits, they got help.
And in 54, he had a major heart attack, which was the year before I got out of the military. And his company let him go. A really good company. And there he was, 54, major heart attack. And I said to myself, that's security. You know, that's false security.
Mm-hmm.
And I better look to do it myself. And I'm stupid their job that year.
Yeah.
A major effect.
Ray, do you want to say something?
Sure. Well, yeah, I got married. No.
What is that? What is that symbol there?
That's just a
red light.
When I got married, the red light went off. We had a wonderful marriage.
Red light.
And but during my 20s, my mom got remarried. She was been divorced since I was 10. And I just had started college. I didn't know what I was going to do, but she married an engineer who had an aerial survey company. So I thought, well, maybe I ought to do that. And he gave me a job, so I was doing survey work when I was very young and still going to college. That's how I put myself through school. And then when Jan and I met in college and we went our separate ways and I was surveying all over the country, we started writing letters again. And all of a sudden, we decided we could get married. So I got married. Then I couldn't work for my dad anymore because I would be flying here and working there for 2 weeks. And
Sure, yeah.
Around. So I had to quit that. And then I took a job at Coors and ended up 6 months after I took a job in engineering, I was their construction manager. And what was really neat is we had a Bible study that somebody, one of my superintendents, asked me to attend. And so we would start going to this Bible study when, and it was really a change.
The amazing hand of God, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're.
I mean, here I didn't know how my dad was going to take it when I told him I was going to leave, and he took it really well. My mom didn't take it too well. My stepdad took it really well.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we ended up in this Bible study and things went on really well.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Bob, you're going to say something. Of all these 88 years, what?
You know, I had a lot of them here, but I'll only tell you about one.
Okay.
That really changed. And it seems like in my life that God had a purpose and he was sovereign. And I just finished writing an autobiography, so I'm prepared for it.
Yeah, you're right.
But in the 20s, I didn't know the Lord. In fact, I didn't come to know him until I was halfway through my 88 years. So this was B.C. But God had a purpose. And when I look back, it could have been so different. And briefly, I'll tell you what happened. I was in ROTC at the University of Washington in the Coast Artillery, and summer camp. I was trained to fire any aircraft guns or these big guns. And first of all, God led me to MIT by providing a scholarship through Top of the Cloud. And I got trained and really in aeronautical engineering, which was great. So when I got back, and the second event was Jinnah, and I go to Proverbs 18:22, he provided a good wife. And I think it was his sovereignty. Well, at that point, I was teaching aeronautical engineering at the University of Washington and running the wind tunnel. And I got a summons from headquarters to get ready to go to North Africa and fire any aircraft guns because I had a reserve commission. I was called up. And here I was, you know, the war effort. I thought I was doing a much better job.
Creating some planes.
Seeing the Lockheed B-38 in the wind tunnel and teaching aeronautical engineering and going off to North Africa. And 12 hours before I had a train ticket to go down to Galveston and be shipped over to North Africa. And that was the time, you know, when Rommel was coming across, and I think we lost 50 to 70,000 American troops in that invasion. And many of my peers in the Coast Artillery never came back. Well, even the president of the university wrote a letter to headquarters, wherever that was, in Washington, D.C., trying to say, let him stay here, to no avail. Here I was, and I had a 10-month-old daughter and a wife, and they were ready to go and live with her parents. And I opened the mail, and there was a directive transferring me from the Army Air Corps, I mean the Army Coast Artillery, to the Army Air Corps, and telling me to go to Wright Field, Dayton, Ohio in a month for my military service, where I learned a lot more about aeronautical engineering instead of being killed or whatever if I'd gone to North Africa. How it happened?
Sovereignty of God.
Believe it. A fraternity brother of mine who knew all about my situation said, oh, you don't belong over there. And he knew a general in the Pentagon. He called this general, and that general, who happened to be one of the round-the-world flyers in the Douglas A-24 in 1924, he removed my file from Coast Artillery to Army Air Corps, and I got these new directions. And you see, my life was completely changed.
Sure.
I may have died.
Yeah.
I may have learned how to fire any aircraft guns, but I wouldn't know anything about aeronautical engineering.
Yeah, and wouldn't have led to all these other things.
God's sovereignty. I didn't know the Lord.
Yeah.
Those guys had an effect on my life and
lots of people.
Yeah. But if you need to buy his book, he does as good a job, and I've used it to give out to people. He does as good a job of melding his really exciting professional business life with his Christian walk, and it came together. They have a bookstore.
Well, anyway. Yeah.
But that's great. No, but this is great, and it's right that you do, because you're a senior among us to reflecting back. These are helpful. These are blessings. And
what's it entitled, your book?
Sure, I didn't.
What's your book's name?
I can't.
The book title.
Oh, When I Consider the Heavens.
Well, let me just wrap this up. I think one of the things that, if you could pursue this. Now, what you'll probably do is, I probably didn't give you enough space. And so what I did is just took just an 8.5 by 11 sheet and just called that the 20s and then called it the 30s, because it allowed me to keep running. And I put a couple columns in there. One, I just listed events and circumstances. And then it gave me more room on the right-hand side to just say the significance of that event, what has happened. And what is amazing, and I've seen guys just like you, Bob, you just watch the hand of God before you even met him. And that's what's so humbling. You know, you just see, and it fortifies what we were talking about before with Psalm 139. That he has brought you in for purpose. And the purpose is not locked up in a career, but he'll use that to maneuver, to train you. As I sat in the 20, I was a young lieutenant, and I, one of the best leadership lessons I had was this. For 5 months, I had this black E8, you know, Sergeant Rand, and this guy was a great soldier, and so he pulled me off the side one day. I've been there about four months with him, and I said, "Well, Sergeant, what do you have to tell this young lieutenant, you know, what do you, any advice for me?" And he says, "Well, sir," he said, you're too nice. He says, "Now these young men will respond to do certain things." He says, "Tell them what you want them to do, but be very clear. Sometimes you're a little not clear, sir." He says, "So tell them." He says, "And if they don't do it, you kick them in the butt. But if they do it, you don't tell them they did a great job. You just recognize they did what was asked. But you save the pats in the back for when they do more than what you asked them." He says, "Sir, you're patting people on the back, and they're only doing a job." Well, I'll tell you, that has been with me for years and years, right? I mean, we all, the wisdom of that. And I'll catch myself, even with my kids. Tell them what's clear. If they just do what I ask them, I tell them, "Hey, thanks for..." But if they do well, "Hey, can I... Yeah, let me give something extra, you know." So they understand that, you know. So these little things, yeah.
Another thought here, for what it's worth. I didn't realize that God did this at the time.
No. No.
And God has a purpose whether you believe in Christ or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'll drag you all the way through.
Yeah.
Until that time comes.
Well, you watch history, you know. Anybody read John Adams or 1776? Yeah, I've read both of these. And I'm thinking it with my mind of seeing all these life timelines. And just look at the lessons. But one thing I loved is at the very end, when John Adams had now lost Tom Jefferson the second term, and he stays around for 5 or 6 days. He's already sent his wife back, but he gets in that, you know, the big buckboard, a big wagon, and a servant, and he and a servant took the 10-day trip back to Boston, and basically said, "I was always a farmer. I was a farmer who got a Harvard Law degree, worked that. I was asked to serve in Congress and serve as the President of the United States, but Now I'm right back to what, who I really am. And I thought, this guy got a healthy identity, didn't he? He just a rooted identity. So no matter what else happened, you know, and you watch God kind of doing that through the years. He helps you see who you are, how your gifts are. You can trace, for instance, with gifts, like you start seeing leadership gifts. And, you know, after you, I remember I was looking at it when I was 35, doing some things about this, and and just revelation came of just the fact is, I didn't get so excited about leading something to accomplish it. Is what I really get excited is helping others do things. And that didn't start until I was about 35-ish, where I was doing that. And so I thought, oh, because my wife said something to me one day, it was very revelatory. So a little thing could just be, you know, she says, well, you are more about, she was talking to somebody else. She says, well, how's Paul like the leading, you know, being the director of Europe? He says, oh, that doesn't get him so excited, but he loves helping those 11 leaders and their teams be successful. And I heard her say that, and I said, that's really important. So I wrote that down, and that comes out. So the more you think about it, the more it comes out. So I'm just giving myself and some of yours an illustration just to keep track of it. And if any of you do it and you'd like to be debriefed to get insights and from an outside source, I'd love to do that with you. So if you complete it, just get a hold of me here, phone number or email, and we could even do it over the phone. And I've done that a lot with somebody that is, they've made their timeline, and then they sent me a copy, and then we just, and I have a lot of questions and things that I could help you get, you know, just outside source, get some more insights out of it. So, and it's really helpful. It gives you tremendous confidence of how God tends to use you, decisions that are important, and even times where you got challenged in your character earlier in your life, and then, boop, it pops up again in your 30s. Oop, it's there in the 40s. And we've traced it with just recently with a guy that, you know, there's an area that God is keeps calling your attention to. How are you doing on that, you know? So, you know, there's a lot of things that could be learned. And it's our data. It's data all about our own lives. So, good. Well, that's it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The fifth, did you finally get a sister?
Yeah, they did. My mother was 43.
She's
yeah, no. It was seven.
Sure.
She was 7 years younger than I. And she was the most guarded young lady in the world. So she just, when it came time, I mean, we wiped out more guys that she'd be home. You know, later teenage, and then they got get rid of that guy, you know. There's, so, and then finally the one that she got, I mean, had to pass not only her dad's, but five very guarding brothers. So she was a princess in our family. So, but it was great because we all left and she had my sister to grow up, you know, be with. My mother did. And so they became such pals, you know, real friends. Yeah, she did. She says she loved it. She felt so protected.
Yeah.
We lived in a little town, you know. Okay, Lord bless you.